my Hooping. House all the time.
Hooping. What'd you say about your ass?
Yes, dude. I said, ever since we started sending sending each other Beavis and Buttheads little yeah. clips, every single time someone does something stupid in my house, I'm bunghole.
I know. We started.
I don't know if anybody understands what I'm saying. I don't care.
Like creep into our podcast because we've been watching some of those.
It's so
acting
much.
Like Beavis and Butthead.
Dude, it's crazy how much I love Beavis and Butthead and how much I was just a South Park kid growing up, but I cannot get enough of Beavis and Butthead. That one where he goes crazy about the guy was he ghosted that chick, yeah. you know? Yeah, the dude, ghosted one. And he you're upset you're getting laid too much?
No, do me a favor real quick and check your microphone. Make sure we're working through that. Tap it.
Tap my microphone? Microphone.
No, I think that we're coming through your computer right now. So what? All right, no problem, man. All right. So as Dave gets set up, we'll go ahead and talk about the player that we're going to talk about. Now, Dave's got stuff he wants to say, so we won't get too far. But we're going to talk about Keyonte George today. Baylor player. Really, really good game. I'm really excited about what he will bring to the NBA. You look for players like this every draft, where you're like, who's the best shooter in the draft? Now, I'm not saying for sure Keyonte George is the best shooter in the draft, but I'm digging in. What's up, man? Something's up with your audio still, it sounds like.
Is it still up?
Yep, you're better now. You're better now. Yeah, it was a little whiff from your mouth, but yeah, you're way better now. So
good deal.
With Keyonte George, I propose that at this phase, he's the best shooter I've seen in the draft. Now, I don't know for sure he will be the best shooter by the time I'm done evaluating it. You guys can see how deep our draft evaluation has gone. There's a couple more players that we've evaluated that we haven't talked about. But overall, I think of him as the most likely to be a legit superstar two guard in what we have in the league right now. I think of him as like a Bradley Beal-esque shooter. I watched a limited selection of his highlights, but then I went back and watched some of his high school highlights, and I wanted to see what he was able to do, you know, when he was at kind of at his freest. And what I came away with of the opinion, the high opinion of, is this guy is a star. Now, I get carried away, but we talk about this. Every draft, there's a player that's right around that 11, 12 range that gets picked. That's the Tyler Hero, the Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, the guy that all of a sudden becomes a franchise player. And a lot of people are like, where did it come from? Well, it came from usually Jerry West picked him or Sam Presti picked him. And now we're seeing this expansion to really where great players are being picked post the 10th pick, a little after that. And usually it's because they're young and they're a little unproven. But when you look at his body of work, I have no doubt that this guy has all the tools. My first question about him was, is he a D-low player? Is he a two-level scorer? Is he a guy that, you know, doesn't really like to attack the paint? But when you watch him in high school, you're like, okay, this guy, he is aggressive toward finishing in the paint. And then you notice in college, his pull-up shot is smooth. His three-point shot is smooth. He likes to stretch the court deeper and deeper. He has no problem getting his shot off. And because of the way that he gets lift off of his shot, it's going to translate well. His size is a little suspect, and that makes you wonder, will he be able to get it off smoothly? But then you start to kind of like look at it and like, he really gets good lift. He's a really, really nice jump shot where he shoots at the peak of his shot. So I think that's going to translate well.
Yeah, and last year we had the pleasure to have J-Dub as the most unheard of name in college basketball, essentially, coming into the draft. We drafted him, obviously. I look at George the same exact way. Keyonte the same exact way, man. He's the most unheard of and the most under-appreciated college basketball player. And because of that, I think there's something to be taken from there. And also, let's just be honest, we all know that Sam Presti in the past really, really, really liked Bradley Beal. Really liked Bradley Beal. So he does show those glimpses. And let's make no mistake as well that Baylor's part of the Big 12. So that's, you know, right in the backyard of Sam Presti's recruiting scouting area. So you know, these things do make a difference. But as far as his strengths and what he is really good at, it's just the scoring. I mean, he can just pour it down. It doesn't matter what level it is. It doesn't matter how he gets the hole. It doesn't matter how he's going to finish. He's just a bucket, you know, machine. And I love it. I think he shot 33% from three-point range. But a lot of the stuff was him creating shots. It wasn't like just him catching, shooting. It was him creating shots. And that's what I like, man. I like a player like that. I like a player that's going to be... Yeah, it doesn't need necessarily a lot of space.
He just maintains balance. Yeah. After he creates that space, so he gets his lift.
Yeah. And I think it's crucial. I think it's one of those things where we're looking at this squad and we're saying, what are the weaknesses? Now, I want to be clear with this with everybody that's listening here is we scout these players and we look at them as a fit for Oklahoma City. It doesn't mean that we want this team to go out and go get Anthony Black or any of these other guys, right? It's just we're doing our good diligence and looking at them in the Oklahoma City system. And I know a lot of people are going to look at Keyonte George and be like, he doesn't fit the system. He's too small. He's too this. Listen, it doesn't matter. Because for me, I'm looking at it, and in the NBA especially, it's about passion. It's about learning. It's about what you're willing to do to become a good player. And I look at Keyonte George, and I had that same exact feeling that I had about J-Dub when I watched him play for the first time. And recognizing that J-Dub was something special. You know, Keyonte George has that wow factor on so many levels that you watch him, you're like, man, if he consistently does this in the NBA, he could be incredibly highly effective, not only scorer, but a starter and even maybe an all-star player. You know, like the way someone's able to score and do stuff like that in college at 19 years old, it's pretty impressive. So Big 12 isn't a bunch of chumps, especially in basketball either. So he was able to put up some nice numbers in college against some pretty good defensive teams. So I'm looking at it and I'm saying, I like him. The size is a factor to me, but I mean, I don't think that, you know, Dort is any less of a defender being 6'3 than J-Dub at 6'6. So I believe it's all about heart and what you're willing to do to get better. So that's all it is, you know, like it's just about understanding what you can do. And I think Keyonte George could come into the team and immediately impact the team by scoring, immediately impact the team by putting the ball on the floor and creating his own shot. And I think if Grady Dick and Keyonte George were both available, I mean, seriously, these are the type of players that we need to have for the longevity of this team, is shooting guys that can pull out that floor. And everybody will say anything they want. I get it. J-Dub and Shea are dry first guys, but they're incredibly effective three-point shooters as well. And as this team develops into more of what we're trying to get this team to, you're going to see Shea, you're going to see J-Dub all of a sudden become 38, 40% three-point shooters. And that's going to open everything out. So if everybody's like, oh no, we need to get shooters, we need to get shooters. Yes, shooters are important. I'm not saying discontinuing shooters, but I'm saying help, let these guys develop still in their shots. Because I think this team could be one of the best shooting teams in the league in a few years. And so for that, it's, you know, where do we prioritize defense, offense, shooting versus, you know, like shot selection? Like, this is where it gets difficult. And this is why for Mark and I, when we keep going back and forth with this, we're like, oh, we like this player, we like this player. But the reality is that, you know, in the coming weeks, it's going to be very clear. And Keyonte George is always going to be on people's minds because his shot creation, as far as in this draft, is elite.
So two primary questions. Number one, will he be available at 12? And number two, what pick would he be? Can we project he would be if he came back to college for a sophomore year?
Ah, man.
So like, you want to get value. You want to get a player who, like, if he came back and he played his sophomore year,
if he played his sophomore year next year,
top five, yeah,
next year, like with next year's draft and the way that I look at it, he would average probably 21 points a game in college next year.
Maybe more.
So I think he would be a top five. I think he'd be. I mean, let's just be safe and say top seven for him.
Okay. So then, second question: will he be available at 12
next year?
This year. Like, the Ringer has him listed at 13.
But here's the thing. Like, I want to be clear with this, is that there's so many guys in that 5 to 12 range, man, that it could go any which way. Like I was talking about Jairus Walker, right? I think that's his name.
Yep, you got it.
All right, Jairus Walker, like I was telling you, from Houston, I love this player. He's a power forward, big body. I love the way his style is, but there's no way he's going to be available at 12. So, and there's other guys like that, you know, and I'm like, oh my gosh.
We still need to talk about him.
I know, we will. I keep looking at the list, and I keep on being like, ooh, I love that player, but there's no, like, Cam Whitmore. He's a little undersized, but I still like the way his style is. Yeah. And I keep going through this, and I keep on saying, like, which players are going to be available? Well, at this point, we got to look at 5 players that are automatic in that 5 to 11 range. There's 5 players that are automatically gone. And that just leaves a couple spots, you know? Like, it's not like it's, you know, math, science combined, you know? It's just there. Like, you can say there's the top 3 players, and then after that, there's these next 5 guys that should go, right? Mm-hmm. And then after that, it's going to be, you know, a crapshoot of 4 players that could be available to us. And Keyonte George, in my opinion, will be available at 12. Okay. Grady Dick may not be available. It comes down to what teams are looking and valuing.
Is he the most likely to be the Tyler Hero SGA of the group, where he surprises everybody, outperforms his draft class, and then eventually ends up being a top 3, maybe even best player in his class? I know this is tough. It's loaded, so it's not a...
If you're a top 7 in this draft... In 5 years, mm-hmm. you're a winner. Let's just put it like that. All right. Because this draft is really, really loaded. And if you can be in a top 7, you're loaded. You're good. There's only 3 players, in my opinion, from 12 to 20 that have that ability. You know? Keyonte George, in my opinion, has that ability. You know, he has that ability to be able to not just be a shot creator. Bradley Beal, but like take it to a whole new level. You know, he's got decent defense. Like a lot of people say his defense is really, really good. And you know what? Like I'm willing to tip your hat to you. There's someone said that his defense was horrible. Listen, I hate talking negative about players, so I'm not going to do that. Everybody needs to work on something, you know? And for me, I'm looking at him and saying, if you're getting him for his defense, then obviously it's not.
What up, Nick?
Yeah, morning, Nick. It's not necessarily the best, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you're picking him up for his offense, then you're obviously understanding the game of basketball because he can just score from any level. And when people say he's a three-level scorer, yeah, no doubt. But he can also bring it out to that Curry range if he needs to. You know, like he's not afraid. And I think that's something that's really valuable is that if you're able to cultivate that and bring that in and really work on that and make sure that confidence stays there, I'm telling you guys, he's going to be looked at as one of those players. But if he goes to the wrong organization...
Jordan Poole.
Yeah. Go to the wrong organization, and you're going to be looking at him saying, Poole. What could have been?
Yeah, you'll be like, why is he shooting that shot all the time? Because, you know, like, the difference between knowing when to shoot the shot, like that shot could be a great shot, just depending on momentum, game situation, how you're playing... All those things, and yeah, but when you talk about the ability to stretch the court, like get deep, 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 like yeah,
well, he could be. You got 3 players in this like area that the Thunder could pick that have an incredible gift in shooting. And in my opinion, if the Thunder go and get any of those shooters, we're good. I mean, we could go get a big man too, and we're good. We could get another point guard, and I would be stoked. You know, like people like if you want to say like we can't have too many guards on this team, just remember last year and the year before when we go down with injury, we go Josh Giddey goes down, Shea goes down, and then we're sitting there with no guards and we're like, we wish we had more guards. You know,
yeah,
like
too many guards. We got too many guards. We don't have
like or what about last year, too, when we went big men, you know, we were like, we have too many big men. We don't have a big man rotation. And all of a sudden guards all went down or big men all went down. And it's like, oh, now we're fine. That's why
Jerry, Pope, there's it was like
you pick the best player at that spot. Like, you will find a place for him. And if he outplays somebody else, that's a good thing. It's never a bad thing if a player goes out there and all of a sudden, like, takes over a starting position from...
What up, Tobias?
Tobias. From somebody else. You know what I'm saying? Like, It's never a bad thing for that. If you're looking at it and saying, well, what happens if Dort gets outplayed and the next thing you know is Dort's coming off the bench and we have to trade Dort? I'm like, good. Hell yeah. That means that our team got better. There's never a negative in this situation. You go out and get the best players available, especially knowing that you can cultivate and develop those players. You get them and you say, you know what? We'll work that out when it comes. Because guess what? Sometimes it doesn't work out. And then you're sitting there saying, oh, well, next time I learn.
When somebody said, like, we don't need Anthony Black. His game is too much like Josh Giddey. Somebody said something like that, and I'm like, we may not be able to get Anthony Black, but
we don't need two testicles, bro.
Right.
We only need
generally
one,
speaking, anytime that you have two two body parts that use the same function, it's because it's a critical function.
We don't need five fingers. Come on.
But, like, there's just so much to like about players who are tall guards who can see the court really well and pass with both hands. Like, could you imagine being like, we don't need Josh Giddey because we have Luka? Like,
sup, James?
Could you imagine how much better your attack would be if you had both of those guys? Like, and, yeah, it might take some time for them to develop how to play together. But you know how that works? You draft them young and you let them get out there and figure it out. Like, you don't do the whole trade for Rudy Gobert and then be like, you guys figure it out. I don't care if it's like you guys don't get along at all. Like, that's how you work it out, man. And so I just feel like, to me, if Keontae George is available and we pick him, it goes back to what we say every episode, which is like we like to evaluate what we think this pick means about what Sam Presti sees the direction of the future of the team. Because when you think Keontae George, you're like, okay. Like, that's kind of where I'm hoping we're going. Now, if it's one of these other guys we talked about that have unlimited upside, you know, and they're kind of like, they take maybe the Usman Jang track, which is like, it's going to take a little longer, that we'll evaluate it and we'll like look at it and we'll get excited about that too. We don't propose that we know a lot, but we kind of like try to look at each player and say, like, if we pick that player, what would that mean about where we're going?
Yeah.
And it gets me pumped up to think about what Keontae George could bring in year three. You know
that's
what
it.
I mean?
That's
even
it,
right away off the bench, like come in and give us something and then
how many times have we talked about this? Like, that's not the future for the Thunder. It's just not. We're not gonna see a rookie come
Except
off
James.
And do what J Dub did this last year. I mean, there's gonna be the possibility of that happening if injury or just straight up baller comes in place for us, you know? But the reality is that we're going to utilize that bench and that G League properly in the future for this team, because we have to, because we can't be bringing in guys, right, that are top 15 picks every single year if we can't get them playing time. They're just going to go backwards. They have to develop somehow. And the way that we've used it is with, you know, whether it's Trey Mann, whether it's Poku coming back, we've utilized the G League to get players ready. It's not, you know, we're not, you know, dissing them by saying you got to play in the G League. We're finding players that are okay with starting off in the G League so that they can get better and get up to speed and not get injured and not get thrown out because, you know, not understanding the playbook and getting thrown in the back of the bench and becoming a pine rider. Because it's like, why do we want to get those guys? We don't want to get those guys. What we want to do is develop those players into great players. Well, you can't do that if we have 9-10 guys that we're already developing in the first team. The G League is the key to everything in the future for the Oklahoma City Thunder.
And other teams are starting to emulate it, right? You're saying the Trailblazers just got their G League team for the first time. Like,
I think there's only one NBA team with no G League. And I said it was the Suns, but I could be so off on that. My brain is shot right now.
Yeah, dude. So we just got a question by Nick about GG Jackson. First of all, I have to admit, I haven't watched him play at all. So we will dig into his game soon because of your suggestion. You're saying he's 6'9", athletic wing, score on all three levels, and he's the youngest player in the draft. So that is something that we all get excited about. Youngest player in the draft, we need to dig into that for sure. So I just pulled up a little information about him while you're talking, and he was born the year I graduated from high school. So, youngest player in the draft, and I'm an old man, but we'll dig into GG Jackson for sure. I'm excited. South Carolina, freshman, pumped up about digging into that. So we appreciate you, Nick, and anybody else who has suggestions about players we dig into. We've got time, Dave. What do we decide? The draft is coming up on the 22nd of June. So,
yeah. Yep.
All right. So we got time to dig into players that.
And if you guys have a player, like you know somebody that wants to be scouted out, throw that up there, man. Like we have no shame. We'll scout out anybody that's in this draft this year that needs a shout out or whatever, because that's just the way we are.
All right, and William is saying Nikola Djuricic. I don't know. I'm the worst. I don't know anything about him, but we will dig into him too because of your suggestion. We'll keep an eye out for all of these guys. Obviously, anybody who made it to the draft combine is going to be somebody that is heavily scouted and report and mentioned by our group. We have picks, and we're going to use them, and we have the chance to move up. I don't know that we will. But Dave made a really good point about potential move-ups situations, reasons that we could maybe be incentivized to move off of that Rockets pick, which for years seemed like, well, not years, but yeah, I guess years now. Like, it seemed like that was one of the most valuable things. One of the things that seems like just, you said, you know, keep your ear to the ground on this situation. Now we're hearing Patrick Beverley talk in his podcast about wanting to, he's probably going to go back. He thinks it's very likely he's going to go back and join James Harden with the Rockets.
Boom.
So, what does that mean for that pick?
Well, that means that pick, they want one thing.
What?
You know what they want?
No,
more than anything? As a top-end defender in Houston.
Well, I mean, I think they'll be happy with Beverly.
Yeah, but you need somebody else, man. I mean, look at that. James Harden doesn't play defense. You've got Shangun doesn't play defense. I mean, their whole team is made of a bunch of guys that don't play defense. That's the thing that they're going to be lacking the most. They need a top-end defender. And there's teams out there right now. I mean, let's just be honest. One of the best defenders in the league is available almost for free. You don't have to trade for him. DB, Dave's, baby.
DB. DA? DeAndre Ayton?
No.
Who are you talking about?
About the Memphis guy that's like, I'm no longer going to play in Memphis.
Oh, Dylan Brooks.
Dylan Brooks, baby.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying, is that like they're going to go out for the top end of the defenders like that. If they don't get Dylan Brooks, then they're going to be looking at the next best person. And who's the next best person in your opinion?
They get Dylan Brooks, James Harden, and what's his name? Patrick Beverley.
Yeah.
What is that good enough? Does that get it done?
They could end up being a top eight seed for sure. They could be.
So does that devalue the pick enough? Because if they're like eighth seed, I want that pick still. But if they're like 14th, no, if it's gonna be like the 14th pick in the draft, I'm like, we can trade up to use that to get to the top five this draft.
Listen, Sam Presti is so close to this, man. If it's going to be one of those situations, James is going to be going there. Sam will trade the pick really fucking fast.
James isn't enough, though. We keep saying that.
No, it's not. But it's all the other add-ons that could happen.
Okay.
And here's the other thing, too, is that if I'm the Houston Rockets, instead of using this pick because maybe there's not somebody on your board that you really want,
yeah,
I would be more concerned about next year's pick, making sure I retain that pick. You know?
Just in case your plan fails.
Just in case. You know? Like if you go out there and you, James Harden, and you trade a couple of players to get, and it isn't enough, and you bomb, your next year pick could be a number five or number six, and then you really fucked up. So I'm looking at it.
So trade the number four pick this year to make sure you get the number five pick next year?
No.
That's every time I'm like,
it's adding pieces to that, though. And Sam Presti's so good at making other teams like feel like they get a really good deal somehow. Like, think about the Knicks. They were ecstatic. Like, we got three fucking picks. Woo! And it was like, yo, you got the trash of the picks, man. Maybe one pick turns out on those picks. You know, the rest of them will be second rounders. That's what Sam Presti's so good about. You know, he makes people feel like they get a good deal.
They could have used some J-Dub out there.
I know. And they could have even used Jang, bro. So my point is that, like, there's somebody out there that's feeling like they got the short end of the stick. And if he's just there and saying, hey, I got you. What do you need? You need that player from that team? I can trade a couple player picks for that player and get that player and send them over to you. For sure. Let's make that work out. It doesn't matter, you know? Like, and I think that's where I get excited about, is the way Sam Presti is willing to be fluent means that he could end up with a third or fourth pick in the draft easy. Hornets have the second pick. I don't think they're going anywhere. But if the Blazers are desperate or the Houston Rockets are desperate or, you know, like Detroit Pistons are like, fuck this. You know, like, we're not getting one of these guys. Like, let's go back to 12. Like, Sam Presti's going to be there and be like, haha, I got you.
Yeah, my biggest thing is I don't think Troy Weaver's going to make a Sam Presti trade.
I'm just using that as an example. I'm saying, like, there's a team. We saw it with the Knicks last year at 11, and we saw other teams trade out as well of their picks. So it's not like it's uncommon for a team to be like, I don't want this pick. You know? It happens all the time in the top 10. They might move a couple places back and still pick their guy that was at, you know, ranked at 12 and they picked him at 8, but they picked up another pick, so it's okay. You know?
Yeah.
But, like, we still see that movement happening all the time. And out of this year, you know, I feel like there could be a couple teams that are like, I feel like this area in the draft is better. You know, like, James has a, you know, let's trade for Giannis. Like,
I think they fired their coach because they're trying to make Giannis happy. I mean, they're trying to win, but
I look at this and there's so many moves that this Thunder team could do. But again,
that's not one of them, bro.
We've got to keep our young team and young core together. You know, like, we just got to. There's no way we should do any trade that's going to break up our young core and cause this team to go into dismay.
Which a lot of different things could do that. The most likely is one of two things. You add the wrong player or you subtract the wrong player. I go back to this all the time. Jeff Green, man. Jeff Green would have been very, very helpful, but he wasn't working on the timeline. We wanted to make a push, and we cut him loose. And he's still a good NBA player. He's still a critical part of what the team's doing. You got to have glue players like Jeff Green. So I got a lot of respect for his NBA career, and I think as we go through picking these young guys, I hope that I don't know. There's been this like idea that the Thunder for a long time has just been a developmental station for players on their way to stardom. Like, yeah, they become stars there and some players stay, but like so many guys develop their game and then they go and they become all stars other places. And I just hope like at some point, because of our winning ways, we're set to retain those players and not just be like, it's seemingly like a revolving door sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, it's not about that revolving door right now necessarily. It's about finding the perfect match for the perfect team. And then that door shuts, right? And we saw that happen last year when we traded these picks for this year away. You know, like, it's important for this team to look at that and say, in a way, Sam Presti was saying, I'm good with just one pick next year. You know, I'm just good. And I'm still not convinced that, you know, if he traded it after the draft, I wouldn't be surprised either, because then he would be able to retain the trading rights of his draft picks in the future if you trade afterwards. So there's certain things that I could see Sam doing that he's just like, I'm content with a team that we have currently. You know, like, I'm content with Poku gaining that, you know, 15, 20 pounds that he's gained already. Like, I'm content with this team getting better with just Chet and keeping this core together. Like, at this point, there's no way that this team is going to go out and trade for a big name player unless it's a gift. Then, I don't even see something like that happening. Like, someone said something about LeBron James. Like, here's the thing. Like, I have no quarrel with LeBron James as long as he stays far away from the Oklahoma City Thunder. You know, like, I love him as being somebody that has really transitioned the game into what we consider now the NBA. I love that. But I never want a player of his stature coming to the Oklahoma City Thunder, because it's going to take the spotlight and all of a sudden go poof. And we're not ready for that. You know, like, next year is going to be at our coming out party. You know, too many people are saying that the Oklahoma City Thunder are going to be, you know, top five team in the West. Too many people are saying that. And it's like, okay, either A, that's how people are going to look at us as a top five team in the West, or they're going to look at us as still a young building team. And the thing is, they're not wrong in either way. We're a young building team and a top five team in the West. And that's what's scary for everybody, because there's just no telling how far we're going to be able to go with this team.
Yeah, and
add players for development, but you keep on getting better. and keep on getting better.
Exactly. So what's the likelihood that you add the wrong player if you're doing it through the draft and through unrestricted free agents who are basically undrafted or, you know, got cut before training camp kind of guys? Like, if you're just adding from the leftover scrap heap kind of thing and you're drafting players, what's the likelihood that you're going to add the wrong person?
I mean, you're always going to add a wrong person.
Right, but what's the, like, that it fucks up your locker room environment?
Listen, it's very low. Sam Press is not going to bring somebody in like that. Does that make sense?
Exactly. It's like, and if they are the wrong person, they get rid of them very quickly.
Very quickly.
But let's say you bring in a signing or you do a big trade and it's like a star or whatever. What's the likelihood that it's the wrong locker room environment? Very likely.
Very.
Right? And it's all of a sudden it becomes very, very likely, and you can't get rid of that person. Not easily.
No.
If it doesn't fit and it doesn't work. So in the end, the most important thing is that if you want to see something for this team, like, oh, this is a way we can improve, how do we do that? Through the draft. Through a process that if it doesn't work, we can just hit undo. You know what I mean? And if you can just say, like, okay, you're cut, we're going to pay you that money and we're going to move on.
It's that age separation, bro. Right. It's that age separation that Sam Presti has set up. We have Kenny Hustle, Shea, Dort. I'm missing one player in that group right there. But they're all the same age.
Sarge right now, but yeah. You know, who knows?
We push reset, right? Those guys go away. I'm sorry, but those guys do. And now we're still sitting with one of the youngest teams in history. And I think that's the thing about it, is that the reset button will never be the same for Oklahoma City because of the time gap and the consistent, you know, bringing in of new guys. If shit happens bad and Oklahoma City has to push reset, you're telling me that Oklahoma City couldn't get 9 first round draft picks right now between Shea, Dort, Kenny Hustle, and any other persons, people that we trade.
So way more than 9.
Well, let's say the baseline is 7. We start with 7. Well, 7 additional draft picks allows us to rebuild what we already have
around Usman Jang, Poku, whatever,
Giddy, J-Dub. Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing, is that, like, when we talk about reset in the future, it's never going to be the same. It's never going to be like, oh yeah, because Sam Presti recognized that if he has these age gaps, that the reset will reset 4 players, reset 3 players, and then we go younger, and we try it again. It's brilliant, bro. Again, he's thought of it 14 different ways, so that everybody else is like, oh well, the Oklahoma City now have cover down for the next 12 years. Like, with Shea, we're only covered down 8 years.
Right.
Now we're 12. Next year, we'll be able to get maybe 1 or 2 more players. And then now we have this year's draft, next year's draft, and the year after, we have a separate age group.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, boom, boom, boom. And it's brilliant. Again, we're resetting it every 12 years. Every single time that we get nice draft picks, talented draft picks, J-Dub's coming up, Chet's coming up. Like, this allows this team to consistently stay at that level. And it's we talked about Sam's masterpiece before, but this is truly spectacular how he set up this team.
Yeah, and man, we got hyped about last year. But, you know, like Nick is saying, if we wait, you know, see what this team is with Chet, and then we start to reevaluate, plus we're adding a pick at least, this value that Sam Presti's been able to nail in the second round is unbelievable. Like, unfortunately, we don't talk about Wiggins enough. Unfortunately, we don't talk about the off-the-court leader JRE is, or what we really think he can be when he has the offseason to prepare. His injury really derailed him. Or, like, the fact that J-Will, like, what he was able to do.
He was a C player. When I say C player, he was on the C, if not the D team, in the beginning of the year, and he lost weight, got in shape, and the G team. Boom.
So what's going to happen with the summer? Like, this team with natural improvement and adding Chet, that would already be a scary, scary, scary situation for the rest of the NBA. like a team gets the number two pick and they made it to the play-in game or second game of the play-in, like that's really incredible. But on top of that, we're so young, so there's natural improvement by each player. So they get 10% better, each guy. And then coach gets a little bit better from the experiences. And on top of that, we're adding a pick. Like, we're adding a pick. So, like it or not, guys, that means that we're going to continue to get younger, which I know everybody likes. But
well, it's just good. It's that's what we have to do. Like, like I've said before that there's going to be a point that we're going to draft an older player. Sure, there will be. But it's not going to be consistently older players. We're never going to draft 3 years in a row older players. We just won't, because we have to develop the younger players in order for these guys to be able to continue doing good things, you know?
I think Presti, we always talk about his legendary trip to Vermont where he grew a beard, right? But I think he really evaluated a bit, like, how is this going to operate when I'm gone? Like, I can't run this thing forever, and it can't be relying completely on my mind. So what you're talking about is, like, always be building for the for 12 years out. If you can pass that on, it has a chance to last 100 years. If it's dependent on you being this master trader and put together a team, and, you know, then it's only going to last as long as you're there. So the system, if he can put it together properly, it could be the new standard. And I think about like the Green Bay Packers. Like, sometimes certain communities in the midst of a world where big cities and new wealth, which is like, first it was billionaires, and next thing it'll be people who have more, there'll be more and more people who have hundreds of billions of dollars. So people with hundreds of billions of dollars will be willing to spend even more money on teams. And then the value of these teams go up. And then people are like, how are these people in Oklahoma City able to hang on to this team in the face of, you know, teams selling for $10 or $20 billion at some point down the line? And what will happen is it'll be because of, like, their ability.
Well, even if they do sell, they won't change the environment.
Right. And they won't, the team won't leave.
Yeah.
But nothing is worse for a team than losing. Sam Presti had to put his credibility on the line to make this rebuild happen. And I think for him, he has to build it in a way where nobody else has to do that. And that's greedy as hell. I mean, that's like talking about getting to the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah.
Getting to the finals and still getting a top 10 pick that same draft. Well,
how are you going to
develop it? How are you going to do it? That's what it's all about.
Sam Presti's wearing multiple hats in the Thunder organization. He right. just is. And he set this up for now, for the future of the Oklahoma City Thunder, that he can take more of a president's role. You know,
yeah.
chief executive, running officer, whatever you want to call right. it, CFO or CCO or whatever. He's going to take that over. That's going to be his job for the future. And I hope that's what he does, because in the reality of everything is that the more hats that you wear, the more that you get worn down. And I want to see Sam be able to pass on that GM role to somebody else that's worthy of it, in his opinion, saying, hey, I'll always be here. I'll always help make these decisions because I'm the president of basketball / blah, 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 blah. But, you know, this is your job, because I want to see Sam in his 70s still be part of the Thunder, in his 80s yeah. if he wants to be. Like, I want to see Sam Presti at the games like Pat Riley, man. And everybody be like, there's one of the greats, guys. There's one of the greats. You know, like, that's what I want for him.
The worst case scenario, you find yourself in a spot where you're like Brad Stevens, and you try to move into that role, and then the bridge that you built is collapsing. So then everybody's like calling for you to step back into your old role to save the team from a situation. Brad Stevens is the only hope, for the Celtics. And they know it. And if he's too prideful to step down from his position or maintain multiple hats to get this ship righted.
Doc Rivers could turn the ship around.
Dude, but that goes back to adding the wrong voice to the locker room.
But that's the thing, though, is that when you have too many voices in the locker room, you need one that's louder than everybody else, man. And Doc would be able to just drown out all the other noise that's happening.
Look, that would be such a threat to the players. If you could if you say, yeah, if you were like, guys, win this series or I'm going to bring Doc Rivers in, they'd probably make a comeback. Like, no, we really like Joe.
Did you hear Monty Williams turn down like a crazy amount of money to be Detroit's coach?
I honestly think, and we'll get to that in one second, but I honestly think Joe Mazzulla when he said he lost the locker room,
yeah,
he did that because he was like, nothing will motivate these guys more than them thinking that the media is coming after me because they like me so much.
I'm your best friends.
Dude, I mean, I remember a coach doing that. I don't remember which coach, but it was like, it's just kind of like, maybe I'm too nice to you guys. I don't know. That's what they're all saying. Maybe I don't run you hard enough. Maybe I don't push you. And they're like, no, coach. Coach, we like you. We're going to play for you today. That's what it seemed like. It seemed like in that halftime locker room, it was just kind of like, all right, guys, it looks like you guys need a new coach. Maybe Doc Rivers is going to come in and fix the job. And they're like, uh-uh. We heard he's hard. Oh, yeah, he's hard, but maybe that's what you guys need.
But that's what
no.
I'm saying. If
no, I, we can play hard for nice.
If you okay, want to keep, if you want to keep Jaylen Brown, right, you want to keep these guys together.
Brad
you gotta
Stevens.
You got to figure like, – Brad Stevens makes sense, but you said he's going to have to swallow his pride and essentially step down – and somebody else is going to take over for him. And he's going to have to be their little bitch. And I don't think that that's going to be something that Brad Stevens is going to want.
He needs to put a steadying hand on it. Either that or get rid of Joe Mazzulla and bring in a veteran coach. He can't hand this team. Like, who knows? They might come back. But if they lose this one of the next two games, he lost the locker room. He admitted it.
Yeah.
He's, you don't do, he's like playing this like next level head game. But in the end... like, you don't say something like that and not end up having, like, the ownership take notice and think maybe, like, we got to figure out a different solution.
I mean, we already know one of the owners is pissed off at all the coaches, so.
Yeah, it's like, I've never seen a team. I mean, this is why I get kind of frustrated a little bit. Like, a team make it to the finals, and then the one thing them not be able to figure out is the coaching situation. Like, they had the players, they had a NBA Finals ready situation, and they couldn't find somebody to lead the team. Like, can you think of a situation like that? I mean, I know sometimes they had a team and they were like, okay, if we bring in Phil Jackson, or if we bring in Larry Brown, if we bring in this like veteran coach, we can get it done. But usually, like, that happens, but it's like they fire one coach or they suspend him and they get rid of him, and then they have another one that they give a deal to. It's, we don't know what the deal is, but we're like, okay, but they're probably not going to keep him. So what are they going to do? Like, I've never seen anything like this. And this, it has the chance of becoming the legacy of this generation of the Celtics. And if that happens, then Brad Stevens better step in, or they're going to be like, why are we paying you so much money just to fuck up these decisions?
And you got to look at it like this.
What's up, Monty?
The security of teams is a big thing, man. And if you're a player and you're looking at it and saying, I can go over here and, you know, it's a crazy situation, I don't want to go there. You know, I could go here. That's a weird situation. I don't want to go there. Or I could go to the Oklahoma City Thunder where everything is set. They're going to take care of me. You know, like, that's going to be what's going to be happening in the future when it's coming to these, like, you know, mid-level exemptions that we'll end up getting, you know, that we can utilize. And these mid-level exemption guys, they're not for every single game. That's not what they're there for. They're for 50 games that year and the playoffs. That's it. You know, like, you can't expect anything more from a mid-level guy. And I think that's going to be fun to be able to see how, you know, Thunder in the future fill those spots out. But right now, it's, you got to say, like, don't fuck anything up. Like, keep it the same. Draft the players. Develop them. Keep it inside the organization. And let the time roll, because you're seeing all the other crazy shit happening in the other organizations right now. And you're like, man, like Detroit, like, they don't know what's going on with coaching, and they're a young team. Like, what happens if you bring a coach in that hates all those players? I'm like, I hate this, you know, like, you're rolling the dice too much in these organizations. Like, you can't do that. You got to create stability for these young players. And that's why you're seeing all these coaches that are right now that are being fired, that the old style coaching methods, you know, they still have a job someplace, no doubt. But these old style coaches, right, and their mentalities aren't needed anymore. You're seeing young coaches be identified as player coaches and coaches that are willing to help these players get better, that are willing to put in the extra hours to get better, not be all of a sudden practice is over, see you guys later, I got to go, you know, to my son's graduation and da 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 da. Like, that's cool. I'm glad that
kid's graduation.
Yeah, fuck that shit. But what I wanted to see is the camaraderie in these young players. Like, watching how you see a team like Toronto Raptors, right, with Nick Nurse. They developed properly. They went through that stage together, I think 8-10 years, whatever it was. You know, you got to that point where they couldn't get past a certain point, so what do you do? Thank you. We saw it happen with Coach Donovan. And Coach Donovan, you know, his track record, I mean, think about it. He went to Marshall, where he coached Jason Williams, and then he went to Florida, where he brought Jason Williams with him, right, and played for 1 year. And then Jason Williams is his first NBA player. And then he's played there, or stayed there for another, what, 10 years, 12 years, whatever it was. And he was able to take that team, bring it to the NBA, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not make it work with the Thunder, but still be able to be a good enough player, develop him coach that he's able to still get. I feel like he
was at Florida for like 20 years.
Bro. What's that?
I feel like he was at Florida for 20 years, man.
I think you're probably right. I mean, like, what, 2015, 16 that he moved to the Thunder?
You so look he at that started team that in won nine, back-to-back championships. It's 96 so many is when he started, players.
Bro. So about 16, whatever, 15 years.
He, 14, I think he. Whatever. Started coaching the Thunder in 2015.
Yeah. So maybe not even a full 10 years there.
No, it's 20 years. You said in the 90s?
Yeah.
So, but he, but what the hell were we saying? I forgot, dude. But
it's about Donovan. It's about keeping that player development mindset. Like when a coach isn't willing to develop players anymore, they have no place in the NBA. Like, whether you're good at developing players later in their careers or developing players earlier in their careers, you're still got a job in the NBA. Any coach that's not willing to do that, they don't have any spaces. So the young coaches right now are being more, you know, like, oh, yeah. Like, how many coaching jobs do we see right now that don't have the majority of the people in the top five of their choices, young assistant coaches or young coaches from other places? It's because there's a high value. Even the Suns' job. You know, your assistant coach for the Suns job is one of the top people, and he's like in his 30s or early 40s. You know, like it's a premiere right now. People want young coaches that because it's the new NBA, it's a new system. They want these young guys that have an idea how to run it, and it's fun to see because I still think that we got the best young coach of the league.
Yeah, I mean, Taylor Jenkins looks like he doesn't have control over his locker room. Maybe that's not a good reflection of his coaching, just like one player acting out. But in the end, I think he and Will Hardy were probably the
two young guys, you know, in the future.
Yeah, kind of like that range. But I'll give it to Coach Daigneault because not because any other reason than like his offense and defense, like the system matches the players, but
it's the Coach Donovan system. Like you have to understand that. Like it's infused with his own.
Right, exactly.
But in order to understand the whole idea that Coach Donovan has put into Coach Daigneault, it's truly spectacular, man. Like I can't. Why I brought up Jason Williams and Marshall was because it's crucial to be able to see this. You need to be able to see Coach Donovan's hand in Coach D's coaching experience. The fact that player development is so key to Coach D and it was so key to Coach Donovan is it, you know, why we have Coach D on this team in the first place. It's not a coincidence that we got Coach D on the Thunder before we went and got Donovan.
Yeah.
You know? He's the future. They knew it.
Maybe they should have just given him the job instead of Donovan in the first place.
I mean, could you have given it to a 20-year-old?
Well, stay tuned for next episode.
Hell yeah, guys. Appreciate you guys.
All right, guys. We'll see you soon.